Lincoln went to war to preserve the Union, not to free the slaves. Although he personally detested the institution of slavery, his aim as president was to end the rebellion in the South, the breakaway Confederate States of America, and to do so as quickly and peacefully as possible. This meant trying to conciliate Southerners and also the pro-Union slave-owning border states like his own birthplace, Kentucky. At the end of 1861, 8 months into the war, Lincoln told Congress,
"In considering the policy to be adopted for suppressing the insurrection, I have been anxious and careful that the inevitable conflict for this purpose shall not degenerate into a violent and remorseless revolutionary struggle."
He even suggested that slaves freed as a consequence of the fighting might be resettled abroad.
"At some place or places, in a climate congenial to them, it might be well to consider, too, whether the free colored people already in the United States could not, so far as individuals may desire, be included in such colonization."
He asked Congress to appropriate money for this purpose, arguing that it was a matter of
absolute necessity, without which the government itself cannot be perpetuated.
For Lincoln, the ideal solution was to end slavery but keep America white. After all, back in 1858, he had declared,
"I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social or political equality of the white and black races. And I will say, in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. There must be the position of superior and inferior, and I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race."
But while Lincoln anguished about what to do about slavery, events were slipping out of his control. The war that was started to preserve the Union ended by freeing the slaves. As Southern men marched off to war, the slave system crumbled behind them. With Massa gone, wives found it hard to keep slaves in their place. One woman wrote to her army husband,
"We are doing as best we know, or as good as we can get the servants to do. They learn to feel very independent."
Even male overseers were losing their clout. When one of them told a slave he was going to be whipped, the black man simply walked away. The overseer wrote to his master,
"I wish you would come down and let the matter be settled, for I do not feel willing to be run over by him."
Even when there wasn't outright resistance, slaves indulged in go-slows or quietly sabotaged equipment. Slave labour was essential to the Southern economy, yet, quite literally, slavery was no longer working. In fact, many blacks took advantage of the chaos in battle areas and fled to the Union armies. Most Northerners accepted that they could win the war only by invading and conquering the South, and the 4 million slaves could be of decisive importance. Encouraging them to escape would sap the Southern war effort. Going a step further and enlisting free blacks as soldiers would strengthen the Northern armies. Lincoln could see that, despite his own intentions, the war had turned revolutionary. But as long as Union armies were losing, any change of policy would be criticised as an act of desperation. The North's bloody victory at Antietam in September 1862 gave him the pretext he needed. 5 days later, he announced that on the 1st of January 1863, all persons held as slaves in the rebel states
shall be then, thenceforward, and forever free.
And when that fateful New Year's Day arrived, he also declared
that such persons of suitable condition will be received into the armed service of the United States to garrison forts, positions, stations, and other places, and to man vessels of all sorts in said service.
Hardly great rhetoric, or a total break with the past. Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation applied only to areas that were in rebellion. It did not affect slaves in states like Missouri that had remained loyal to the Union. But black leaders rightly saw the proclamation as a turning point. The black abolitionist leader, Frederick Douglass, observed,
"Once let the black man get upon his person the brass letters U.S., let him get an eagle on his button and a musket on his shoulder and bullets in his pocket, and there is no power on earth which can deny that he has earned the right to citizenship."
And blacks flocked to the colours, amounting to nearly a tenth of the Union armies by the end of the war. Two of Douglas's sons joined the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, an all-black unit, though almost all its officers were white. That summer, the regiment won national renown for its courageous assault on Fort Wagner, part of the defences of Charleston, South Carolina. Douglas's boys survived, but nearly half their comrades did not. The white commander of the 54th, Colonel Robert Gould Shaw, was among the dead. Confederates stripped his body and threw it into a ditch with his men. Shaw's father told the press,
"The poor benighted wretches thought they were heaping indignities upon his dead body. But the act recoils upon them. They buried him with his brave, devoted followers, who fell dead over him and around him. We can imagine no holier place than that in which he is."
Equal in death they may have been, but not in life. White soldiers received $13 a month, blacks only 10. After Fort Wagner, James Gooding, a corporal in the 54th, but previously a newspaper man in Massachusetts, wrote a letter of complaint to the president on behalf of his less literate fellow soldiers.
"Your Excellency will pardon the presumption of an humble individual like myself in addressing you. But the earnest solicitation of my comrades in arms, besides the genuine interest felt by myself in the matter, is my excuse. Now the main question is, are we soldiers or are we laborers? Let the rich mold around Wagner's parapets be upturned, and there will be found an eloquent answer. All we lack is a paler hue and a better acquaintance with the alphabet. Now, Your Excellency, we have done a soldier's duty. Why can't we have a soldier's pay?"
Eventually, the U.S. Congress passed a bill for pay equality. But there was a fierce northern backlash against the Emancipation Proclamation, particularly in the border states and the Midwest. White soldiers deserted in their hundreds. In the 1862 elections, Democrats who opposed the war won control of several state legislatures. The lawmakers of Illinois called the proclamation
a gigantic usurpation, at once converting the war, professedly commenced by the administration for the vindication of the authority of the Constitution, into the crusade for the sudden, unconditional, and violent liberation of 3 million Negro slaves, a result which would not only be a total subversion of the Federal Union, but a revolution in the social organization of the Southern states, the present and far-reaching consequences of which to both races cannot be contemplated without the most dismal foreboding of horror and dismay.
Jefferson Davis, the Confederate president, naturally took the Emancipation Proclamation as yet more proof that the South was right to secede. But he also claimed that because blacks were incapable of surviving on their own, it was a crime against them. The proclamation, he said, was
a measure by which several millions of human beings of an inferior race, peaceful and contented laborers in their sphere, are doomed to extermination, while at the same time they are encouraged to a general assassination of their masters. Our own detestation of those who have attempted the most execrable measure recorded in the history of guilty men is tempered by profound contempt for the impotent rage which it discloses.
Henceforth, he advised, captured Northern officers, white or black, should be dealt with under state laws for the punishment of criminals engaged in inciting slave revolts, and that meant they could be hanged if found guilty. This was January 1863. 2 years later, however, the Confederacy was on its last legs, its army decimated by death and desertion, and Southerners now had to think the unthinkable, filling up the ranks with slaves in return for an offer of freedom after the war. Soldiers were bitterly divided on this issue. Grant Taylor wrote home to his wife in Alabama,
"To think that we have been fighting 4 years to prevent the slaves from being freed. Now to turn round and free them to enable us to carry on the war. The thing is outrageous. I say, if the worst comes to the worst, stop the war at once and let us come home."
But a sergeant from Louisiana thought the idea made sense.
"If we continue to lose ground as we have for the last 12 months, we'll soon be defeated, and then slavery will be done anyway. I think we should give up slavery and gain our independence."
At the top, General Robert E. Lee wrestled with both sides of the argument.
"Considering the relation of master and slave, controlled by humane laws and influenced by Christianity, as the best that can exist between the white and black races, I would deprecate any sudden disturbance, unless it be necessary to avert a greater calamity to both."
But he concluded that in the present dire crisis,
"I think we must decide whether slavery shall be extinguished by our enemies and the slaves be used against us, or use them ourselves, at the risk of the effects that may be produced upon our social institutions. My own opinion is that we should employ them without delay. The best means of securing the efficiency and fidelity of this auxiliary force would be to accompany the measure with a well-digested plan of gradual and general emancipation."
The opinion of Lee, by now a Southern icon, carried the day narrowly in the Confederate Congress. This was too late to make a difference to the outcome of the war, yet it was an immense symbolic act. Throughout U.S. history, military service had been a mark of full citizenship. The racial code on which Southern slavery was based assumed that most blacks were not capable of being free men and citizens. So allowing them to bear arms in defense of the Confederacy was a radical step. General Howell Cobb from Georgia recognized this clearly.
"I think that the proposition to make soldiers of the slaves is the most pernicious idea that has been suggested since the war began. You cannot make soldiers of slaves, nor slaves of soldiers. The day you make soldiers of them is the beginning of the end of the Revolution. If slaves will make good soldiers, our whole theory of slavery is wrong."
Cobb had finally got the message. 200,000 black soldiers and sailors in the North showed that the South's theory of slavery was utterly wrong. On the other hand, the North's theory of freedom was flawed as well. Blacks fought mostly in segregated units, and although receiving equal pay, they were still the butt of abuse and discrimination. Thanks to Lincoln, America's blacks would be forever free. But as we shall see, equality proved a very different matter.